Hello, everybody, to the best podcast that has the most lovable but sarcastic introductions. I'm your beautiful host, David, and today I'm joined with somebody who is very special and near and dear to my heart. It is my wonderful sister, Tali Voron. Tali, hello.
Hello.
Happy to have you on here today, tonight.
It's so great to be here. Thank you for having me.
I know this is your first podcast because we just talked about it 5 seconds before we hit record, but how does it feel? I want to get your side of things here.
It feels good. I'm glad that my first podcast is with you. It feels extra special.
I'm happy too. So before we get started, I always like to ask, what are you drinking today on the podcast?
So I actually had two drinks with me. I had my coffee, but I was overexcited and I finished it before we started recording. So now I have my trusty cup of water.
Very nice. For myself, I have some water, but I chose to break out a little Stella Artois, which I'll get the crack. I don't know if people like this, but this should be good. So that should have sounded nice, hopefully.
Wow, I feel a little boring now, but that's okay.
Oh, don't worry. Most times I have water myself. So okay, it's all good.
But it's a good choice. That's a good choice.
Thank you. So how's your day? That's my first question.
My day has been good. Nice and busy and packed with meetings. How was yours?
Good. Oh my God. Had meetings today. I woke up at 7 a.m. Or actually, I woke up at 6:30. To start my day at 7, and I ended it at 3. Lots of meetings, lots of trainings. But it's good overall. Very happy.
Very nice. I like that you woke up at 6:30 to wake up at 7. That's how I function.
Exactly.
You got it. Plan in advance.
That's right. So, Tali, let's get right into it, because I do have some questions about things that I feel like I've always wanted to ask you, but I guess that never came up.
Okay. So, let's do it.
So the first thing is about the Soapbox, which is a company that you founded, and I would love for you to kind of let everybody know a little bit about what the Soapbox is.
For sure. So the Soapbox Press is a micro press that I founded in 2016. We are Toronto-based, and our whole mission is to provide a platform for emerging writers and also to create a community for them. So we publish chapbooks, which are very short collections or books of 48 pages or less. Typically, they're for poetry, but we kind of expanded that. So we also publish short stories or really anything that we can fit under 48 pages. We also publish creative writing anthologies, and then we've published 2 novels.
That's amazing. That's amazing. And yeah.
Go
ahead. I think it's amazing that you started up a business. I think it's incredible. I think it's really amazing that you've kind of made a name for yourself in this. I don't know if niche is the right word. It kind of feels like a niche industry. But you've made a name for yourself. And I wonder, how was it starting up your own business and just kind of taking that leap of faith?
Well, first, thank you. Second, I guess you could say it's a niche industry. Publishing is one of those things that people don't really think about it. It's kind of like, if you know, you know, and if you don't, it isn't something that crosses your mind. So I totally get that. And how was it starting it? I started it, I always say, very naively. So if I knew what it actually meant to start up a business when I was fairly young, I would probably think twice before diving right into it, but I'm also very glad for my naivety because that allowed me to get the Soapbox going. I just remember it being really exciting. It was exciting to take on a project that was very much fueled by my passion. It introduced me to people that I otherwise would not have met, and that's actually how I formed my team. And I think it gave me a lot of confidence to find something that I loved, that I loved doing, that I found others gravitating towards, and then actually turning it into something that, when it comes to books, we could hold in our hands afterwards.
Yeah. I think that's a really special thing with the Soapbox, at least in my eyes, because what you create, like, you see your creation firsthand and you feel it, and it's what's the word? It's not... Oh my God, what's the thing when you can feel something?
Oh, it's tangible?
It's tangible. And I think that's a really special thing, because when you look at your products, and when I look at, and when I see the inventory as the inventory manager, as my role there, yeah. it's awesome to be like, wow, she played a role in creating this and bringing people together. And I think that's really awesome.
Thank you. Yeah, I really agree with you. I think one of the highlights truly of being in publishing, it's the moment when you see the book and you get to hold it in your hands for the first time. And it's this really powerful moment of like, wow, we made this thing and now we're holding it and it's here.
Yeah. So, you know, you said that you were young. Oh, obviously, I know you were young, but you said it. And what was your first challenge as a young entrepreneur with the soapbox?
Let me think back. I think the first challenge was probably creating a roadmap for what we were going to do. So I knew I had an idea, and then I had to figure out how to turn an idea into effectively a product and then on a larger scale into a business. So with somebody that came from no business background, trying to figure out what is my business plan? How are we going to earn money? How many people do I need to make this thing work if I actually need people outside of myself? And then what are those people going to do? How am I going to find writers? Mm-hmm. And I mean, this isn't good business advice, but for me, I kind of just did what I knew. So I would say it almost felt intuitive. It was so much trial and error. It was kind of like, where am I going to find writers? Well, I'm a writer and I see a lot of other writers on Instagram. So I'm going to go be on Instagram and then build a community over there. And then that worked really well. And then, oh, let's see what's happening on Twitter. And then let's check out all the different independent bookstores in Toronto and walk on over to each one and then introduce myself to the person who runs the bookstore and then say, hey, can you stock my books? And then maybe two of them will actually say yes, but then a partnership is born. So it's really, it's a lot of fun troubleshooting.
I like that. Fun troubleshooting.
Yeah.
That's actually really...
If you call anything fun, it immediately feels better.
That's so cool. I did it. So that's what you did. I never knew that. You would go to all the small bookstores and basically talk to anybody you could.
Yeah. You become sort of a door-to-door salesperson for what you're selling. So we were selling books and we were also selling an idea. And our idea was this community that we were building. And so, yeah, that's exactly what I had to do, was sell this vision and then ultimately the books to our writers, to bookstores to carry us, to when I was organizing a conference, to other universities and colleges to partner with us. So, yeah, I guess a lot of business is sales, which you know.
Yeah. So one thing I hear about entrepreneurs, kind of the, I guess the kind of the standard is it's very nerve-wracking. It's kind of you're looking out into the unknown. And so did you ever encounter a feeling like that when you were starting out?
Yeah, constantly. And that feeling never goes away. There is no stability in business. It's funny because as a person who hates uncertainty and has a really hard time dealing with it, to start up a business is the most counterintuitive thing. So what I found to make it more manageable is I would look at things from a year-to-year basis. So rather than thinking this decision is going to impact me 10 years out, I think this is what my plan is for the year. I'll execute on this plan. And then a year from now, I'll make another plan. And then
I like that.
It creates building blocks. But you're always working towards the future, but you don't take everything on all at once.
I like it. It's like breaking everything up into more manageable bite-sized pieces.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I wonder, so as you're progressing, you know, you were growing the soapbox over the years, do you remember kind of the moment where you took a deep breath and kind of said, wow, like I can do this. Like, this is real.
Oh, that's such a great question. I think I had many of those moments, but let's say two really, really pivotal ones when it felt like I was really doing something that I could in that moment feel the impact it was having on other people. One was our very first book launch. And that was in the fall of 2016, I think. At that point, my team and I had been working on putting together an anthology. All of our communications with our writers had been over email. Everything was basically done in remote. And then when we had our first launch and we had our writers come out and their family and their friends, and we were all in one room together and watching the writers reading their pieces, we had a friend of mine that I did my undergrad with. She was a musical guest, and so she performed, which was really, really special. And we kind of had it as a party, right? It was a launch party, so I literally went and bought a cake, and we all had cake together. And it was just so cool to stand up in front of that room and think the Soapbox is what brought all of these people here together. And this is a book that we published a year before then. None of us had any idea that we were going to do this. So it was very surreal. And the fact that people actually came out was really, really validating. And then that they bought books. So that was one moment. But I don't think it fully set in for me until 2 years after that. I was organizing From Pen to Published, which was a day-long publishing conference. And we partnered with the 11th Floor Writers, which is a writing collective that's based in Toronto that are really incredible. We published an anthology with them. And then we also partnered with them to put on this day-long conference. We hosted it at U of T. We had sponsors from other universities and colleges. We had over 200 people show up.
Wow.
And it was one of those things where there were months of preparation for this conference. And again, everything was done in remote, aside from meetings where we would meet in person to discuss what we had to do. But until the day of the conference, despite tickets selling out, despite people saying they were going to come, I had this pit in my stomach that we had done all of this work for months and nobody was going to come. And then to actually see us filling auditoriums, filling the networking room, selling books, having people holding our merch and our pens and our shirts, it was mind-boggling. And it was almost like I was running on autopilot for all the time that I was preparing this with my team. But then to actually be standing there in front of that auditorium and realizing that we did it, these people are here, and we're providing something really, really valuable, something that when I was a student, I wished existed. It felt so surreal. And then I thought, okay, I can do this and I can do this. And I did do it. So I think that was a very, very special moment.
That's amazing. And you killed it, and you are killing it.
Oh, I must say,
because it's been awesome to see over time as your younger brother, see you grow and mature, and to see you kind of fall into this leadership role that I knew you always were capable of kind of being in, and just seeing the Soapbox rise. I remember telling you, I don't know how young I was, but I'm like, I see the Soapbox in the future as it being like one of the big buildings in downtown, the high rises.
Oh, I remember that. That's so sweet.
It was my early manifestation days.
You were always really, really supportive, and that always meant a lot to me.
I try my best.
And means a lot.
I appreciate that. I think that support with any project, with any choice, career move, whatever, it's important to have support from the people you care about most, right?
Absolutely. And I think that's another really pivotal thing. It's interesting because especially in the beginning, that support from your friends, from your family, from your close network, it's essential because that's what keeps you going, especially when you don't have that traction in the beginning. And I feel really, really lucky that I never lost that support, that my family and my friends are still very much connected to what I'm doing. And it means the world to me because it's so heartwarming that the people I love are also very invested in what I'm doing. So thank you. But another really cool moment is when you realize that the market that you're serving is no longer your friends and family, and suddenly you're filling rooms of strangers. And if your family and friends can't make it, it's okay because they're not who it's for anymore.
Right.
You know?
I think that is amazing. And so actually kind of, as you mentioned, going over the years, as you get people and customers, how has the publishing industry evolved over the years since you started the Soapbox?
Ooh, that's a fantastic question. That could probably be a podcast on its own, but this isn't a publishing podcast. So I will say, oh, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, you can we can reschedule you to come back on another time, and it can be all about the publishing industry, because that's something I'm very interested in, actually.
That's awesome.
But continue.
But I will say one really big shift that I have seen, and I think the industry in itself has noticed, and we're all quite grateful for it, is I think the publishing industry has become a lot more inclusive and a lot more mindful and a lot more self-aware over the last 7 years. I think there's a much bigger focus on publishing diverse voices. I think it's a lot more intentional about who we're publishing and then who are the people that are publishing. And a lot of especially small and micro presses that are starting up now, their mandates are very, very specific to give space to people who traditionally may not have had a platform to have their voices heard or their work published before. And so in the case of the Soapbox, our mandate was to give emerging writers, so new writers, a space to be published. It's very, very hard for new writers to make their way into the publishing industry. So that is who we were focused on. And over the last couple of years, so many other small presses have come out also with the mission to give emerging writers an opportunity and a platform. And so I've loved to see that. And then of course there are other presses that are focused on other more specific groups of writers, but it's been really good to see that shift.
That's amazing. So I think kind of now my business brain is thinking a bit. So with the Soapbox, what do you think was your kind of your key differentiator that set you apart from all the other presses at the time and that allowed you to continue to grow this company for the last 7 years?
Yeah, I really do think that at the time it was that we were focused on emerging writers. That was number one. And number two, that we were actively building a community. So we were a two-prong company where one, we were publishing books, and then two, we were bringing people together. So we hosted workshops and panels. We hosted networking events. We did mentor lunch and learns. Really, our focus was to connect established professionals in the industry with writers and people who are interested in getting into the publishing world in a career-minded sort of way and connecting them together. For those that aren't familiar with the publishing industry, it is a very small industry, and often it can feel very hard to break into it. And there's very little helpful information out on the internet about what does it mean to work in publishing? What is it like? And so for me, it was really important to also create a community that kind of demystifies what the publishing industry is, what it works like, how do you get into it? Because again, those were answers that I was looking for when I was trying to figure out if this was a world that I wanted to enter.
I love that. I think that's just beautifully worded the way you said it. I think it's amazing that right there is just like something that can carry you, and I guess has carried you to success. And you just built off of it. So kind of shifting away from the Soapbox as a focus now, yeah. I wonder, through the last 26 years of your life, through all your experiences, what have you learned about mental health and self-care since starting your own business?
Ooh, that is a great question. What have I learned about mental health and self-care since starting my own business? Yeah, I think, many lessons, as you can imagine. I think one really key thing that I learned was that you can't do it all. And I have a tendency to take everything onto myself, even if I know there are other people that I can delegate to. And that isn't sustainable. I learned that burnout is very, very real. And it can be really difficult to recover from if you don't take care of yourself. And so surrounding yourself, one, with people who are very invested in your well-being, just as you are invested in theirs. Two, having those people that you are surrounding yourself with be people that you can trust and that you can delegate to, and you know that they will deliver when you delegate something to them. And three, an understanding that you can't do it all. Still try to lead a balanced life. I think that took me a really long time to learn, and that you don't always need to be working. And that can sound really counterintuitive, but I mean, especially when you're running a business and you're trying to make it a success. I found that I just got to a point where people would ask me, you know, what do you do for fun? And I would say, what do you mean for fun? I'm either working, or when I was a student, I would be studying, or I would be working on the soapbox or doing the volunteer work that I did. Everything that I did, it was all very productive, but I found when it came to who am I as a person outside of my work, I didn't leave any room for that. Yeah. And that makes it very hard to sustain. So balance, yeah. Balance is key.
I like that. That's something myself that I'm also learning just from being in school and now, I guess, being on an internship. It's just that balance, like you said, it's absolutely key. And I'm reading a book now. It's by Celeste Headlee. I like her very much. I forget what it's called, but it's a very popular book. And she talks about how being idle and taking a moment, even just watching TV for an hour, 2 hours, isn't being unproductive. Because productivity doesn't have to mean go, go, go all the time. And so that, and especially with what you're saying, kind of just to bounce off of it, I love that, because just taking those moments to yourself and making sure that work isn't your whole life, or school, or whatever single project, that's just the key.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think going off of that, just unlearning the idea that rest doesn't mean you're lazy. Rest doesn't mean you're unproductive. We need rest. Yeah. We shouldn't feel guilty for sleeping, so we shouldn't feel guilty for not working. We're not working machines.
No, absolutely. I fell victim to hustle culture back in high school because I was like, I need to wake up at 5 a.m. I need to do homework at from 5 to 6 and then eat breakfast and then go on a run and then eat more and then do schoolwork until school happens. And it's like, oh my God, dude. Like, I don't know how I did it for the month that I did it.
But looking back, that's impressive.
I don't know how the hell I did that. But looking back, I'm like, and I guess as you grow, you learn things about yourself. But I'm like, no, that's like the kind of the hustle culture. And I don't know how much of a hustle culture, quote unquote, there is in the publishing industry, or kind of there at all. Oh, there is.
Yeah, big time, big time. I think a really common thing in the publishing industry is this idea that first you have to hustle and work for free before you can work for pay. Mm-hmm. And that creates a lot of barriers in itself of who can actually enter the publishing world, and can be a little bit problematic in itself. But yeah, definitely a lot of hustle culture, expectations of working outside of your regular hours to attend events and that sort of thing. It's similar with a lot of industries, kind of the idea that when you're at the bottom of the food chain, you should be really grateful to be there and do absolutely everything that you can to keep your place, because so many people would love to be in your shoes.
Yeah.
And that's definitely not limited to publishing. And it is very much a stereotype. I understand that. And everybody finds a different way into the industry, but it's definitely there.
So in your eyes, with, I would say, the vast amount of experience you have in the industry, do you think that is a mindset that should change? That kind of you're a fish in an ocean of sharks and you have to fight?
Here's the thing. I find that in the publishing industry that we have here in Canada, it is a small community, but it is also a very warm community, in the sense of I have always found the publishing community to be overwhelmingly positive, and that whenever I've reached out, I was always received with open arms. I find people are very giving. They're very open to sharing what they've learned and sharing their advice, simply because of how challenging the industry can be to navigate. and everybody knows what it's like to be just starting out. And so they want to make that easier for the newcomers into the field, because ultimately with all of the new folks that are coming into the publishing world, it just makes us stronger. I think what I'm referring to in the sense of the specific case of publishing and that sort of hustle culture is that working in the arts, in whatever arts you're in, whether it be music or theater or film or visual arts, there's sometimes a lack of appreciation that comes with that. And so it can be really hard to make a living that way. And so publishing is no different, where you kind of have to fight to earn a living in that field. Yeah. So you kind of need to hustle to make it work. And again, that can be said for many fields. So it's tough to say. I wish we lived in a world where we all could count on good salaries that would allow us not to panic, and that we could afford the cost of living, and that hustling in the ways we do wouldn't be something that's, let's say, necessary for survival. But at the same time, I think it's good to work hard. You know, I definitely think there's value to that. It's a work ethic, it's discipline, but there needs to be a balance. And for it's sure. tough to say how and where that can shift.
For sure. So this question, I don't know how easy it's going to be to answer, but it's going to be a nice segue into the next few that I have. So as your career has progressed and you're doing new things, taking on new roles, new challenges, do you feel that you found your passion?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I feel very lucky. I've been saying for a little while now that I feel very lucky that I get to wake up every day and work my dream job. I think what's really interesting is that, you know, when you're growing up, you think that your dream job will be one very specific thing, and you can point to it and say, that's the role that I want, and that's the role that I want to be in forever. Like, I want to be a doctor, and that's it. I'm just going to wear the doctor hat, and that's going to make me happy. I think for me personally, my dream job is composed of many different things. And so right now I teach. I'm the managing editor of a literary magazine that I love very much and I feel so lucky to work at. And then I also have the work that I do with the Soapbox and with Plume Press. So it's kind of some of the parts of my dream job I've created for myself and I've made it part of my dream. And then the other jobs that I have, I kind of found them as a result of what I learned about myself. And then I just feel like I got really, really lucky. So I think, I've definitely found my passion, and it's just a matter of how can I turn my passion into something that will also allow me to sustain myself. And I feel like at this point, I've been able to do that.
When you gave me the call, or when you sent the text to our family chat or whatever it was, when you were like, I got the job that you have now, it made me so happy that it's like you got right where you want to be. You got it. And it was so, it's phenomenal. I'm still so proud of you for getting to where you are now. And I think, you know, obviously people, and I think maybe myself too, we're kind of thinking about like, oh, what's our passion? What do we want to do in life? All these things. So in your experiences, do you have any tips or kind of words of wisdom or advice that you can share for people that are still trying to find their passion or are uncertain of where they want to go in life?
Okay, so many great questions today.
Thank you.
You're very good at this, but we know
this.
Thank
you so much.
So I think for me, I just had to follow what it was that I enjoyed doing. And so I always did a bunch of volunteer work. When I was in high school and undergrad and my master's, I was always part of many, let's say, newspapers, literary magazines, other organizations. And I just had to think to myself, what is it that I'm the happiest doing that when I do this thing, it doesn't feel like work? And I feel like I could do this and I enter my flow state. And I mean, it took a lot of reflecting for me to get to this point, but I realized that I really love working with people. I really love opportunities where I can make a positive change or impact for somebody and provide an opportunity. And I also really love writing and being creative. And so for me, naturally, you know, when I was figuring out what I wanted to do after high school, that led to me studying English and education. Education allows me to work with people. I initially thought that I was going to teach and be a high school teacher. And so in the process of studying education and then also English literature, I discovered publishing. And then I went on to do my master's, and then I started working in the publishing industry, but I always had teaching in the back of my mind. And so I kept thinking to myself, if I can do something where I get to teach, but maybe not in a high school, but then I also get to keep my creative side, that would be really, really awesome. And so for a long time, I thought maybe if I can make the Soapbox Press my full-time job, where we're publishing books, and then I'm running and organizing all of these events, because I also really loved events organization and bringing people together, then maybe that would be the best fit for me. And then I landed a teaching job at Sheridan College. And then I thought, well, this is really awesome. Now I'm teaching at the college level. I'm teaching writing and publishing, which is a dream because that's the field that I work in. And I also still get to work in my field. So it's kind of like figuring out in what different settings you can thrive and then finding work that aligns with, I guess, more, not even a specific task, but either some sort of value that you can provide or a general type of activity that you can be doing. And so, I don't know, that feels really vague, but I would say you just really, really have to think about in what cases do you feel the best doing what you're doing.
Yeah. I think honestly, the question that I asked, that's like a very difficult question to answer, and you handled it excellently. I think that's a perfect answer.
Thank you. I feel like I rambled for a little too long, but that's okay.
That's what The Real Ones is all about. You know, we provide real conversations. Sometimes those are a little rambly, but that's what we love the most.
If I had a podcast, I would call it The Rambly Ones.
The Rambly Ones. I like that. And so something else you kind of mentioned on the form, intake form, is you wanted to talk about navigating life after graduation. And I think that's a very interesting thing to talk about because I'm going to be in that position in about 3 years. So for yourself, what was your first thought when you graduated from your undergraduate program?
Well, my first thought was finally, and then my second thought was, thank God I'm going into my master's, because I kind of was out of my undergrad, but then I gave myself a buffer year in a program I was really, really excited to do before I actually had to face, you know, life on the other side of schooling. I think why I often really like to talk about life after graduation is I think a lot of people, they have this, it almost feels like a quarter life crisis because you're no longer a student and then you have to figure out who you are and what you want to do. And you're no longer a kid, but you also don't really feel like an adult. And I know a lot of my friends and my peers at the time, there was just a really big sense of dread of who am I and what am I going to do with myself? And so I think it's important to talk about that and then also normalize it because we all go through it at some point, whether it's after high school, if you're not pursuing post-secondary education, if it's after you finish your post-secondary degrees. So I guess to answer your question, I dealt with it after my undergrad. So
maybe I'll change that question to after your master's.
Yeah.
So when you enter the real world.
Yeah, I think then it was just sheer panic. Just sheer panic because I did not know what I was going to do. I felt a lot of dread and I really didn't know. I was applying to jobs. I felt at that point in my life, I felt very lost. It's interesting because at that point I didn't know if I wanted to even stay in publishing. I was telling everybody that I didn't and that I wanted to go into marketing and I was applying to all of these. Yeah. And I was applying to all of these tech startups, and I had no luck. I mean, I had interviews, but I wasn't getting any offers. And I would always joke that I kept trying to leave publishing, but it kept pulling me back in, and maybe that's where I was meant to be. Because what ended up happening was I had interned at a publishing house in Toronto that I really, really love during my master's. And a couple of months after I graduated, they had an opening and they invited me back and they offered me a job. And I thought, wow, this is really meant to be. This is such a blessing that, you know, I felt like a ship lost at sea and then something was pulling me back to shore. And then I got to stay in a field that I really loved and I didn't have to leave publishing after all. So I guess the decision was kind of made for me in a way, but there was definitely a really, really big sense of panic and then relief once I knew at least what my next destination was.
I love it. Yeah, I think exactly like you said, this needs to be talked about more normalized because I think people at any stage, I know some of my friends, they panic about what they're going to do after graduating, and we're still 2 or 3 years away from that. So I think it's really good that you're kind of in your own community, in your own network, kind of pushing that to be normal, to be talked about, which I think is fantastic.
Yeah. And I think there's always this pressure, even, you know, if we forget, what are you going to do after you graduate? But at any stage in life, this pressure to have it all figured out.
Yeah.
And something that my friends and I talk about a lot is, if we didn't have social media, would we still feel this pressure? Would we still feel like our lives have to be perfect and look perfect if we couldn't compare ourselves to each other all the time?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I think at any stage in life, we can feel like we're behind or we haven't done enough or that we're not in the right place because so-and-so is actually doing something else that looks really glamorous on an Instagram post. But obviously that isn't reality. And so I think being able to check in with ourselves and with each other and just understand that nobody knows what they're doing. And we're all just figuring it out, figuring it out as we go along. I feel like that's a lot more authentic.
Yeah, 100%. I fully agree. And so we're kind of getting close to the time when you have to leave. So I don't want to keep you too far past that. So I just have two questions left. The first one is, what advice would you give to somebody who is just graduating now and trying to figure out even just how to start navigating life in the real world?
Okay. Well, I would say, don't panic, you're good. You did the hard thing. You finished whatever milestone you just finished. So I would say, first, allow yourself to celebrate it and allow yourself to enjoy it. And then take a deep breath and then check in with yourself and then think about what you want next and then move towards it and whatever that means. And what's interesting is some really great advice that I actually got earlier today is, I don't know, David, if you are somebody that really needs instant gratification of, if you want something, you want it right now, immediately.
Yep.
Yeah. So the advice was for people who are like that. And I think in some senses I can be like that, where I want everything exactly as I want it right away. And so just to say to yourself, you can have everything that you want, just not right now.
Yeah.
So it's all there. Like you just need to wait a little. And so it's kind of the same idea when you're hitting, when you're hitting any sort of major life transition of, you'll get exactly to where you want to be and where you need to be. Just baby steps.
Yeah. I like that. I mean, I've kind of, as I've gone to therapy and kind of worked on myself and grown up, I've kind of strayed away from that instant gratification. Like, I want it right now, how I want it, when I want it. But I think that's really nice. That kind of piece of advice you got, to just take it one step at a time, however small that step may be.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And so the last question is, well, this is something I like to do to kind of throw a curveball and toss it back to you and ask you, do you have any questions for me based on whatever we talked about today or beyond?
I would love to hear. Oh,
go ahead. Yeah.
What's one thing that made you happy today?
Wow. It's funny. I journal at night, and that's a question I get. Like, what am I grateful for? So I'm going to put this in the section. What is one thing that made me happy today? What made me happy today is I was able to have Elizabeth, who's been on the podcast, my girlfriend, for those who do not know. She was able to come here, sleep over, and we spent my entire work day, so from 7 to 3, doing work, being in each other's presence, talking, having fun, like just taking breaks and just kind of coexisting with one another. And that was just really peaceful, and it was a very nice change of pace.
Very nice.
Very happy. Yeah, thank you.
I love that.
Thank you. And that about wraps up my questions for you, Tali. Thank you so much for spending some time with me this evening on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me. This was so much fun.
Thank you. It was awesome to talk to you. And some of these questions, I didn't even realize they were like burning questions. But when I thought of them and typed them out, I'm like, I need to get the answers to these. Like, I just want to know what you're thinking.
That's awesome. So, well, thank you so much. Great questions. You really are a beautiful host.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And to everybody listening, I hope you guys enjoyed this week's episode. Please, if you don't mind, rate the show on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts. You can follow me on Instagram or on LinkedIn if that's your preference. And check out The Soapbox and Plume Press. They're phenomenal companies. And have a great day, evening, or night. Bye.